Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Broadcasting from the Shaw Star Market Studios, the destination for Boston sports fans. This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1 Lawrence, Boston.
An Odyssey station.
Protect your privacy online for free with DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
It's a Wednesday edition of OMF with Lou Maroney.
With Lou Maroney.
The gentleman's name, Lou Owen, and then the other gentleman that was talking.
Christian Fourier.
Question for Fourier.
And Glenn Ordway.
I'm not Glenn.
Ordway?
Yeah, do you know what an Ordway is?
No.
None of us do.
The Red Sox continue to face allegedly dominant pitchers, and they're not impressed.
But at the end of the day, we bang, you know what I mean?
We talked to Alex Cora at 2:30 about the surging Red Sox.
Come on, man.
Mel Kiper will join the show in the 5 p.m. hour.
Now it's time for OMF.
Thanks for listening.
On EEI.
I was actually impressed the other night. I heard Scaly actually pronounced your name correctly, Lou.
I noticed that.
But you know what they're doing? Did you notice what they're doing?
What?
They're telling him it's like two names.
Yes.
It's Lou Maroney.
No, I just told him. I told
it's
you
not
before.
Maroney,
no,
it's
two words. You say Loomer. Lou Maroney.
Well, maybe they're like, you know, trying to, you know, phonetically kind of change it where he pronounces
it
correctly.
Yeah, it's a tough name. I know. It's a tough one.
Because I used to say when people used to do my games, they would say, how do you pronounce your name? I would give them the number 4-E-A. Just say it like that. 4-E-A.
That's it.
For perfect Nugent.
Faria.
For Farrario.
Well, yours is difficult. I would say that. To some people.
That's
some
my
people
fault, though.
It is.
That's my parents' fault.
But Lou's isn't. It's the first time I think Scal has actually pronounced it correctly. But he's pausing in between. So somebody got to him over there at NBC Sports Boston. Just take a pause. It's like a second or so.
No. Right. Hey, they're making fun of you for saying his name wrong. You better get it right, Scalabino.
you just heard Alex Cora joining us at 2:30. The Red Sox win again. They win again. And I'll tell you what, thank God the Red Sox are off to a terrific start, because more and more I see of this NFL draft, and we're now, 7 days away? It's next Thursday.
Yeah.
I would say this. You're getting all of your lift from the Red Sox right now, because come next Thursday, there is no freaking way Bill Belichick is drafting one of these quarterbacks at the top.
Oh, you think it's for me? It's like my mental state? Like the Sox are playing well,
I'm
the Yankees suck, and you're saying
it.
I'm going to get let down come draft day?
It's like a safety net.
I'm preparing for it. Sometimes you prepare for the worst, and that way it doesn't seem so bad. Doesn't mean I got to accept it. And I'm listening to some of these coaches talk about some of the quarterbacks I'm interested in, and I get excited.
Yeah, there's no way Bill's going with a quarterback. So Bruce Feldman on The Athletic does an NFL draft confidential. So I guess NFL draft confidential, he goes around, he finds a bunch of coaches, right?
And how confidential is it really when he's kind of, you know, he's like giving you all the information?
We're doing it confidentially. We're not going to tell people who you are. So let's go through a few of these. Let's start with Trevor Lawrence. Is Trevor Lawrence clearly the best quarterback in the first overall pick? And you got what you expected. Quarterback coach number one. He's a no-brainer top guy. I was trying to be critical and not just go with the flow, but the more you study him and the other guys, he's the best by a wide margin. Quarterback coach number two. We don't know who he is. He checks all the boxes. He's a very good athlete. He's got a good arm. I don't think it's an elite arm, but he can make all the throws. Smart kid.
Oh, God.
Yada, yada, yada.
I mean, before you go on, can we please, I hate the, you know, the you know, he's got all the tools.
All
you know,
the tools.
he can make all the throws. They're so this such a it's a Matt Chatham
proven
issue, I guess,
winner.
That I'm having.
Can
no,
make
you
all
know,
the throws.
He can make all the. You got to be more specific. Yeah. They all can make the throws. All of them can make the throws.
Especially when no one's covering
yeah,
him in pro
nobody's
days.
Nobody's covering you, and you have 20 seconds to throw
covered.
The damn ball.
All right, so we expected the number one pick in the draft. People are going to look at it and say, okay, this guy's great. He's terrific. That's why he's the number one pick in the draft. Now you've got four other guys, and we've already heard that the Jets drafting number two have set their sights on Zach Wilson.
Are we sure about that?
Well, that's what everybody's
saying,
he's
the
saying,
one guy
right?
that no one's even talked about. Even like Trevor Lawrence, he had his little interview, people like, ooh, red flags, but still he's going to go number one. So he's the lock. But all of a sudden, this kid from BYU is the absolute lock for New York?
Well, when you read some of this with these coaches, and by the way, we not only have coach one and two, but we have coach three in this one, all confidential. Seemingly every year, now a quarterback who is off the draft radar has a breakthrough season and emerges as a first-round prospect. This year, Zach Wilson is that guy. There are a lot of rumblings. He'll become the number two pick to the Jets. What do you think of him? Coach number two. I definitely have concerns about the level of competition. Ooh, this guy goes from just being a guy in 2019, and now all of a sudden he's being talked about as a top five pick. Ooh, it happens, but he's not playing against an SEC defensive front, Pac-12, Big 12 front. Ooh, a lot of his throws are space throws. What are space throws?
Well, he's
no
throwing,
pocket.
Throwing
wide
into,
open space.
Throwing into voids. Yeah, throwing into
go.
Giant voids.
But he even talks about how, like, yeah.
It's like a pro day. It's like
right?
a pro day.
Yeah, you're throwing in space.
But he talks about you don't see him in a tight pocket a lot of times in that league. You know, the competition, he said, in our league, it's a tight pocket league. He's not the biggest guy. He's got an arm. He can really rip it. I love the talent, but there's a lot of risk there to me. So he's, you know, he's, and maybe open space. You're talking about wide receivers open. I'm thinking more like just wide open in the pocket. Like, no one's getting on his ass. You know, and he just sits there in pocket comfortably.
I'm not sure where that definition came in. I guess we're both right.
So I don't know. You get
partial credit, Lou.
You get influenced when you read some of this stuff. The confidential coach is talking, and in this case, I don't think this is a rave review of Zach Wilson. Here's coach number three. Some of the stuff he does is jaw dropping. You're watching him and going, "Don't throw it, don't throw it," but then he does, and he makes the play. He's crazy on the field with his decisions. He has that snap release. He's really accurate, making some of those off-balance throws. And then he says the good with Zach Wilson, this next coach, coach number one, is really good. But the bad can be really, really bad. And when he goes to a bad team like the Jets and he's trying to win games, there are big concerns.
Yeah, no, I mean, because he's kind of a loose cannon. He's kind of reckless. He's, you know, he's for – here's a guys like Zach Wilson, they're so unbelievably talented and athletic that they make these crazy, unbelievable throws under duress. You're like, holy cow. And then they screw up the simple stuff. And you're like, okay, come on. You can't have it both ways. Can we meet somewhere in the middle? Because the simple stuff, if you can't do the simple stuff, that's when you're screwed. Because I think all these guys have these unbelievable arms and have the ability to make great clutch throws. But, man, if you can't get in and out of the huddle on first and second down, like, well, I mean, it doesn't matter how many great throws you can make.
What are we talking about?
See, so we've identified. So we're talking about these five quarterbacks. You believe a couple of them, maybe two or three, are going to suck. Maybe we've identified one of them. This is that little coach one. I like it. He said, if I had to bet money, I'd bet he doesn't work out for the Jets. Zach playing right away in a market style makes me nervous. He goes on, but he talks about how this one guy, it says basically he's like, woof. He's like, him playing in New York, that's not going to go well. I love that quote, woof. It ain't going to go well at all. So, I mean, we've identified one guy that sucks. So there you go. You feel better now? Taking the third or fourth guy or the fifth guy?
No.
No, one guy already sucks.
Well,
sir, Zach Wilson, he's going to New York. He's going to suck. We all agree?
Well,
yes.
I mean,
yes.
I think the odds are that out of the five, three are going to suck. That's just what it is. And so, fine. So you get a confidential report, right? Because you work your way up to the really smart ones, the ones that make the decisions. You're not talking to his quarterback coach. You're not talking to the guy that trains him out in Florida. You're not talking to his high school coach. You got to think about all the intangibles. You know, you're not looking at where he was raised and how many great quarterbacks came out of that region. Like, none of that stuff. You're talking to the coaches who are actually – you know, doing the evaluation the right way.
So I love this. These are guys, obviously, that have to make evaluations when they get to draft day and decide who they're going to draft. This is one of these coaches, confidentially, by the way.
Oh, I like the confidential coaches.
I could see Zach being a Pro Bowl quarterback quickly, like Justin Herbert. Or I could see him being like Drew Locke.
Yeah, see, I like that. Like, and that's
cover all the bases.
Yeah, see, I hate that comment. I almost want to take that coach out, though.
Right.
You know, because how can you sit there and say, I think he could be great, or he could be Drew Locke? I don't think anybody wants to take Drew Locke as a second overall pick.
No.
Nobody.
No.
So you just come out right away. I mean, that's just talking about bailout
special.
Not even
a second round pick.
How the hell did you come out with that comment?
You can't sit there and give me the two opposite sides of the spectrum right there. Either he's going to be, you know, a castle or outhouse. Like, no, where's the middle class? Why can't he just be a good quality starter for 8 years in the league?
Mm-mm.
Like this guy's gonna be your quarterback. Like it's gonna, he's not gonna, be an all pro, but he's gonna be consistently good and you can win with this guy.
See, I like this one though, because then we start getting into guys that maybe I'm interested in. And I've been kind of focusing on Justin Fields. Maybe I should focus more on Trey Lance. Coach one. He's a little like Josh Allen. Which we think Josh Allen's good?
Year three he was.
Could be Rocky at the beginning.
Christian's not ready to go.
Could be Rocky the first few years, but you trust him. Trey needs a year or two. Josh took three. He had an amazing arm. Josh had an amazing arm like Mahomes, Rodgers, whatever, the biggest arms in the league. But I do think Trey is a lot more refined coming out than Allen was. I think he'll be fine, even if he doesn't reach his full potential. But I think you go for potential. So, I mean, I'm in, again, on Fields and Lance. Either one of these guys.
You want to wait
a year or two? Yeah. Fine. You've got Cam. Cam's your starter anyway. Give me a shot on reaching your full potential. Thank you. I like Coach
I think
one.
You're going to be disappointed come next Thursday night. I do. But I will say this, and we'll get to the other guys, including Mac Jones, because there's some interesting stuff there. But more and more when you read about Lance, you can see the 49ers are not going to take Lance. They are going to take Mac Jones because they're one of those teams that needs to win right now. We're going to talk to Alex Cora in just a few minutes. He joins OMF from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio. We'll do that coming up next for you. Excuse me, at 2:30 today. Coming up next, though, we'll get to these other quarterbacks. Does anybody really believe that Bill is going to give up assets to move up and get one of these guys when the confidential coaches are telling us, ooh, there are a lot of red flags here?
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The show that's open weekdays 2 to 6 for Patriots fans. It's OMF on EEI.
With the first choice in the 2002 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select David Carr, quarterback from Fresno State.
You look at a quarterback like Joey Harrington, we talk about leadership, and we go back, and I'll tell you, if I didn't think Joey Harrington and David Carr play, I'd tell you, I think they would be overrated. I'd push them down to 30th, 50th, and Jeff George, 84th, Meyer, 30th. I don't see anything with Harrington or Carr that you can't say is a question mark in terms of them becoming a quality starting quarterback. So I think they're going to both be solid or much better than that at the pro level, and I think when you look at Carr and Harrington 3-4 years down the road, you are not going to call any one of these two players a bust or a disappointment.
David Carr was a bust after 4 years, and I would say Joey Harrington was worse than a bust. What do you call worse than a bust?
He was, I would say Carr actually had a long career. I don't even know, but
he did play a while.
But Harrington was definitely a bust.
Oh.
And that's ultimately the way I feel about all this. And I know, Mel Kiper will be on with us at 5:10. And I'm curious if Mel Kiper. Sure, why not?
You think he believes he bats
1,000? The issue is
we still put Lombardi on, and he drafted Jamarcus Russell.
That's a good point.
But I wonder, I wonder if Kuiper
makes mistakes.
And I wonder if Al Davis made that pick to his defense. But if Mel Kuiper picks these guys based on if with him thinking, okay, I'm the GM of this team, this is who I need, or this is who this guy should pick based on their needs. Like, how does he do it? Is he does he kind of like Adam Schefter it? Is it his opinion of who should go there, or if he was the GM, this is the guy he would pick? I need to figure out how.
I think you're talking about how Kuiper does it.
Yeah, when Kuiper makes a pick, when Kuiper says, "Okay, the Patriots need to move up to four to pick Justin Fields," does he think like, "Hey, if I'm the GM of the New England Patriots, I'm going to put myself in their shoes and say, I need a quarterback. I know this system. Justin Fields is the best option for me to do what I want to do."
See, I think that's what he does, and we can ask him that this afternoon. He'll be on at 5 o'clock. But I think that's what he does. He is a draft expert. He watches all of these guys, and he evaluates them as players. I'm not sure that he has this unbelievable network of what's going on with teams. I think you get Schefter and others to kind of furnish that type of information, right?
You know, and we've just been talking about all these quarterbacks. I just wanted to just go back just for a quick second and just go back and look at some past drafts to try and get a kind of some sort of perspective on what we should expect. Okay, from these guys. So the last two times there were five quarterbacks drafted in one round. You have 2018. That was the Baker Mayfields and Sam Darnolds, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and Lamar Jackson. But back in 1999. Okay, you also had five quarterbacks taken. It was Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith. Who remembers Akili Smith? Another Oregon quarterback, Dante Culpepper.
Look at who he's taken by, though, and that.
Well, Cincinnati. Again, yeah. No, right. And I think that's part of it. I mean, there's a bigger discussion when you say that, okay, if Akili Smith was drafted by Philly and Donovan McNabb was at Cincinnati drafted 3, they went 1, 2, and 3. This is similar to what we think is going to happen this year. And out of those five guys, two of them hit.
Yeah.
You had two of them that were, I would say, Donovan McNabb was a great quarterback. Dante Culpepper was a really good quarterback. Cade McNown, Akili Smith, and Tim Couch, come on. Like so when you think about it, you probably hit on 23% of the guys that are coming out.
My only thing is that didn't you feel like at the NFL level you can watch college football now and feel like they can adjust to the NFL better? Like you have a better understanding? Some of the offenses are similar? The way they run athletes, whether it's running the football, getting outside the pocket, like arm strength. Like
All those things, they all have – pretty much equal to, I mean, there's an extreme like Josh Allen, but all of them are strong. All of them are
great. No, I know that, but I'm saying like the quarterbacks now, you look at a guy like Kyler Murray, and you know, if you were just basing him off a pocket passer, which is what you were doing in 1999, what you were doing in 2004, 2008, you know, pocket passer, he could throw the deep ball, but he's not that accurate. You'd sit there and say, eh, you know, if he didn't run a 4.440, you'd sit there and say, eh. But the fact that he can run opens up an offense, changes the way they defend him. So I feel like a lot more of these guys come into the draft now that are athletes that can run.
Yeah, I would say.
You know, can survive, that can play. Then it's like Josh Allen's a perfect example. Lamar Jackson. They both run really well. Josh Allen developed as a passer. Lamar hasn't yet.
Okay, but see, that's.
But you can win with both of them.
So that's the key. Okay, so Josh Allen actually led all quarterbacks in rushing, okay, his first year. And we recognize – if you want to make it in the NFL, you're going to have to do something that you're not comfortable doing. Like, they're going to take away what you do best. That's what all great defenses do. All right, this guy likes to run. Let's make him play left-handed. Michael Lombardi loves saying that. Make him play left-handed. Let's see if he can beat us. Okay, you're not going to be able to run. We're going to be disciplined in our lanes, and you're going to have to throw a crisp, clean, accurate pass on 3rd and 2 with 2 minutes left. Can you do that? Hey, and you can't run. So I've completely taken out your safety net. I've completely removed your binky. You can't run anymore, Kyler Murray. Josh Allen, you have to throw it. You have to let your receivers do their job. That's to me, and that's where Lamar Jackson is always going to fail. Like if he can't find another level to his game, he's always going to be explosive and exciting, but he'll never get to the next level.
But let's also remember that Baltimore took him at 32. And in that position, it's not that big a deal. It's almost the second-round draft pick.
Still your first-round pick.
Yeah, but the risk is not as great as what we're talking about with 1, 2, and 3 or 1, 3, and 7. But I think your point is a good one, Lou. And then I think that the quarterbacks coming out of college now, because they're playing more of a pro game in college, and they do run a little bit, and that's where the pro game is going. Yeah. They have a better chance, but I still think that this is such a huge risk.
Of course it is.
You got to have risk
in your life. You got to live a fulfilled life. You got to risk once in a while. Don't you have a college quarterback right now, a guy that can run but really can't throw? Or I don't know, accuracy? You know, I know all these college kids got better arm strength than Cam. So, I mean, you know, some of these guys can run. Like a guy like Justin Fields and Trey Lance, what's the knock on them? And what would be the difference between them and Cam Newton? They all, both of them have stronger arms. Both of them are faster than Cam. You know, they both can run. If you have a quarterback right now that can, his biggest asset is power running. That's it. Like, that's it. And Bill won 7 games with him. You know, we think Bill can win 10 games with him. So it's like, well, give me a younger guy with a better arm, and I can sort of teach him playing in the NFL and reads and going through all of that. I just feel like you've got one right now. And I think a lot of these kids that come in, when you look at the drafts recently, I think you got a better understanding. There's still a couple of misses. There's no question about it recently. But I think there's a lot more hits in the last 3-4 years than there have been maybe go back to 99, 2002, 2006, whatever.
So CBS Sports put this study together, 32, an average of 3.2 per year, right?
Quarterbacks.
First-round quarterbacks. And the total hits, okay, 7.5 out of 32. That's 23%. Now, I've got to believe that the hits for other positions other than quarterback are a lot higher than 23%. And it's because you need a quarterback, you overrate the quarterback, you overvalue the quarterback, and therefore you make picks like Tim Couch and Akili Smith. You know, even Sam Darnold, if you look at Darnold, number 3 by the Jets. Where's Sam Darnold? Baker Mayfield, I think there's still major questions about him, right? He's a decent NFL quarterback, but you drafted him number 1. Number 1, you expected him to be a dominant guy. All right, we'll get back into football a little bit later on. Alex Cora, as he joins us every Wednesday, he will join us from Fenway Park. That is coming up next right here on OMF.
Tanner, how good was it to get that first one? I know it was your first home run, but you seem like you've been hitting the ball hard on the line.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely good. You know, get the first one out of the way. I wasn't trying to get anything. I think that whole inning, Alex Cora predicted. To be honest with you, I remember him saying that the guy's going to get a hit, JD's going to get a hit, and I'm going to hit a 2-run homer. So he kind of predicted that whole inning, to be honest. So you guys got to see what's up with AC and those predictions with his mind and stuff like that.
Xander Bogaerts getting that big home run. AC predicted it.
Wow.
That's what he's telling us. Alex Cora brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, official supermarket of the Boston Red Sox Radio Network, Arbella Insurance, and Zenni. The official eyewear of the Boston Red Sox, major league style at minor league prices. Visit Zenni.com. And from Fenway Park is Alex Cora. Hello, Alex.
What's going on?
Man, you got the crystal ball out there? Yeah. You're predicting innings now?
I've been predicting home runs the whole season. No. And it never happens.
What's your track record?
I'm like 32%? I'm like, nah. I hope it's 85%, but actually it's 10%.
I thought so. Yeah. I want to ask you, because you told us when you first came back, you said that being away from the game, you got an opportunity to see it from a different angle. And you talked about defense and a lot of stuff. I look at the approach to hitting, and it certainly is working right now for you. But it's much different than what we're seeing with Major League Baseball in 2021. Is this all by design and all by observations that you made being away from the game?
No, I think it's the personnel, right? The guys that we added to the roster, they make contact. Marwin, Enrique, Christian Arroyo has been outstanding for us. As far as contact rate, those three guys are helping the cause. We knew Bobby was going to swing and miss, but there's not too many of them in our lineup, and it's a good feeling. You know, it's a good feeling when there's men at third, less than 2 outs, the infield is back, and somebody's going to hit a ground ball to short, and we're going to score a run, and sometimes we get pull happy, especially against lefties, right? Soft throwers, lefties. But overall, against good pitching, we've been staying in the middle of the field, going the other way, and they've been working on their craft. They're staying on it. Also, as you know, early on, you know, we crushed some balls here, you know, and because of the weather and you know, the baseballs, the ball didn't travel. So I think that works to our advantage, right, to our approach. Instead of hitting fly balls, we're hitting a lot of line drives, and it's helping us out.
No, it's been great, but it's against the book, right, of how people.
Which book?
No, Major League Baseball, the way the teams operate these days. It all seems to be cookie cutter. Analytics.
Yeah, I mean, walks, strikeouts, and homers, right? But I do believe that the game is going to change. It's not changing yet, I guess. You know, strikeouts are at an all-time high. But, you know, we like our approach. We like our roster, the way they're going about their at-bats. And hopefully we can keep it up.
You know, Alex, Garrett Whitlock has been outstanding for you guys, but I'm just curious on, like, the usage of him. It's, I know he had Tommy John. Maybe that's what it's all about, protecting the kid, but it's like he's out there, what, every fourth, fifth day, multiple innings. Is that kind of like the plan, or is it more of how the game sort of dictates it?
I think the week dictated, you know, how we use him. You know, he's not a long guy, but he's a multiple inning guy, just like Matt and Reese. So, you know, We pitch him in Baltimore against Baltimore down 10-0. Then we pitch him against Baltimore in a one-run game. He didn't pitch for a while, so we had to pitch him against the White Sox. But there's a guy we trust, and we just got to make sure, you know, we have somebody that can go multiple innings ready on a daily basis. We use Andrees. At one point, he went three innings, if I'm not mistaken, right? And we ended up winning the game. So we had to stay away from Witt, bring him in for one inning. Actually, we used him in Minnesota for – he was supposed to pitch two innings, but we had Edward. He came up for as the 27th. I'm like, you know what? This kid is going to be in the big leagues. He's going to help us out later on in the season. Let's get him an inning right now so he can see – how it is, you know, get that heart rate up and go over there and compete at this level. And it worked to our advantage. So, but this kid is good. He's really good.
Yeah, because even like Monday, you know, he came in through that 2 1/3, and I figured that kind of game, do you save him for Toronto? But is it just the luxury that you have? No, some of the back-end guys are throwing well?
No, it's, I mean, we had to use Valdez in the doubleheader, so we were short at that end. You know, we were very short. And I told him, you know, like what Philip did in that doubleheader, it helps you throughout the week. You know, we lost two games. It wasn't a good feeling, but he actually saved us from being, you know, short over the course of the week. And you know, the willingness to go out there and back-to-back games in the same day and do the job, it was amazing. And I'm glad that Phillips is throwing the ball well, and he did that for us on Sunday.
So, Alex, did E-Rod have to talk you into sending him out to start the seventh?
No.
Okay, so you were happy. So it was fine with what he was doing, right? Just he knew he was going out there?
Yeah, he was going out there. You know, actually.
Because he got the quick hook. He got, you know, gave up that home run. Then he obviously, that was
yeah, and then after that, you know, Andrees, with the three-batter rule, he faces one righty, one lefty. And then they pinch hit. We have Darwinson up for Tellez or Panic, right, if they pinch hit. They have the DH hitting eighth. They had the catcher hitting ninth. So they can only pinch hit for one of those two guys. So they use their best pinch hitter with nobody on and two outs against Andrees, which we're very comfortable. Then we have Ottavino probably facing one lefty because they can only pinch hit, like I said, for a DH or a catcher. You can't pinch hit for both. If not, you don't have a catcher. So they pinch hit with a lefty. We got him out. And then he had all those righties. So we got him all out. And then we brought in Barnes, and we won the game.
So for all your starters, just curious on this part, like, is there, like, a sweet spot? Like, how many innings? Like, what's the floor for your starters, for the guys? Like, do you all say, listen, okay, listen, we got to get to five. Like, or we got to get to six. Like, after that, we'll call it as we go. But I need you guys to give me at least six innings. Is it different for every single pitcher, or do you kind of read it as you go?
It's different every single day depending on who's available. You know, five is perfect for us if everybody is good to go, is rested. And that's never the case, right? But five is good, six is perfect, and we can, you know, manage as a group the 7th, 8th, and 9th.
We're talking to Alex Cora. I was very disappointed. Matt Barnes gave up a base hit last night in that game. He has been unbelievable and just in total control in the ninth inning. What is it? What's going on with him? What has happened here?
His best fastball since, you know, I manage him in 18 and 19. This is his best fastball. It's not that fastball up in the zone that sometimes was competitive. Most of the time it was non-competitive fastballs, you know. And he's attacking guys. He's ahead 0-1. He's getting to two strikes in less than three pitches. You know, most of the time it's right away, boom, boom. Then he can use the fastball up. And it's not above the zone. It's actually a good fastball. You have to make a decision as a hitter. You know, it has to be a good sound decision, swing decision. It's either, okay, I got to get on top of this pitch, or if he takes it, it might be a borderline strike. But it looks in control, too, on the mound, very relaxed. He made some adjustments throughout the offseason. I mentioned in spring training 19, when we talk about bullpen and the ace ace reliever and all that, he came to the office and he was like, Alex, I'll do whatever you want. This year, when he came to the office, he said, I want to be the closer. There's a big difference there, right? Like, oh, I'll do whatever the team wants. No. I want to be the closer. And that showed me a lot. And he went in spring training and he did an outstanding job. Had a conversation with Adam. And, you know, Adam was like, Alex, just I'll get outs in the seventh and the eighth. You know, Barnes is ready for this. And they've been great. I know Adam struggled a little bit early, but you see the stuff yesterday, 96 on top of the zone. We're very comfortable with him. Obviously, we're missing Brazier, but everybody's stepping out there. But what Barnes is doing is helping, actually, the structure of the bullpen.
You know, so as long as Barnes is kind of, you know, not throwing 2 or 3 days in a row, you talk about that three-hitter minimum. How does that change a four-run lead in the ninth, right? Because I know you've used Barnes a couple times. Does it at all? If you bring a guy in, he's got to face three, and next thing you know, it could be a two-run game, right, before you can get to Barnes. Does it change it?
No, I mean, the two times we brought him in, it was like a two-run lead or going into the ninth, and or he was hot in the eighth with two outs. You know, we were going to bring him in if another base runner gets in. So I would hate to him to get hot and then, you know, sit him down, put somebody in, and then he has to come in. So when he was hot in the bottom of the in the eighth inning, I'm like, okay, he's coming in. If it gets out of hand, we'll bring somebody in. But it hasn't gotten out of hand. It's like bases loaded, two outs. We got Barnes and Valdez getting ready. We're one swing away from going up six or seven. And, you know, it's an out and he stays four. So he understands that part.
So, you know, the other day we had this a very spirited conversation about positional players pitching. Especially early in the game, like seventh inning, like the White Sox are doing. I'm just curious to know, one, have you ever been called to pitch at all in any game? And two, like your opinion of, you know, just teams throwing out positional players that early in a game.
Yeah, going to the White Sox, we knew they were in trouble. When Yolito threw 42, 43 pitches in the first inning, we were like, something, you know, they're short. They got a series against Cleveland. They actually sent down one of their long guys in the morning. So, you know, they're expecting their ace to go six or seven innings, right? That didn't happen. So, they were in a bad spot, and I understand that. It doesn't look great, but you have to manage the games and your team the way you think is going to be appropriate to survive the week, and they did that. Tito, actually, in 2008, we're in Baltimore, and the game is getting out of hand. We were down – not out of hand, actually. We were down six, and he goes, hey, AC, come over. Can you pitch? I'm like, of course. He's like, well, just go get ready. I said, no. I'm going to get ready in the bullpen. I'm going to the bullpen. I'm going to come from the bullpen. He's like, okay, just go out there. So I go there. Jason is not playing, so I'm warming up, getting ready. It was going to be Vladdy, Aubrey Hoff, and somebody else.
God.
And we're down six. David has men at first, two outs, and it's a home run. And right away, Okajima actually was pitching. He gets out of the seventh inning, I think it was, you know. And as soon as the ball is, you know, David hits a home run, the phone rings, and he's like, no, we got a chance now, so you're not pitching. So I didn't pitch. I was sore the next day. I all the effort, you know, like just the downhill angle and all that and the effort you put on. That's amazing. Do you ever pitch, Lou? You pitch at the big leagues?
High school, man. No, never in the big leagues. I just drilled everybody. I had no clue where it was going.
Wait, so what do you think your pitches would clock out at?
Me?
85.
Wow. We have a nighttime host.
I pitch all the way through my junior year. I was a decent pitcher.
Listen, I know a manager's got to do what he's got to do. It just looks silly and clownish when you have to do it in the seventh inning.
The seventh inning.
I think there should be a rule in Major League Baseball. The managers have to do it. So Tony La Russa should have had gone out in the seventh inning and pitched. Okay? That's the way we do it. Yes.
No.
Why not? If it's going to be clownish, let's make it
That
really
was a tough
hilarious.
Day for Tony anyways. 11 a.m. game for Tony, that was a tough one.
Hey, Alex, you mentioned Christian Arroyo earlier. Like, we saw a little bit of him last year, and I know he's swinging the hell out of it, and it's impressive, but for me, defensively, what he's doing is maybe just as, if not more. Like, what did you know of him coming into the year other than what you saw in camp?
Well, he was a top prospect, right, with the Giants. First-round pick, if I'm not mistaken. And as you guys know, when you get drafted in the first round, there's something special there. When he was with the Giants, they had Crawford and Panic. They were winning World Series, so he never got a real chance to play. He gets traded to Tampa in the Longoria trade, I want to say. And, in Tampa, you know, he only played against lefties. He didn't get a real shot. Then he's had options, and Cleveland picks him up, and then the Red Sox do the same thing. Coming into spring training, my expectations were like, this guy, he can play good defense. I saw him last year. Ramon and Carlos, they talk about him turning the double play last year, and they liked it. But he needed to fight for a spot, you know, with Michael. And, he kept putting good at-bats. He showed me that he can play short, which was very important for our team. Knowing that Marwin and Kike, we were going to move them around, and having one more guy that can help us at shortstop was going to be huge for us. But the at-bats, and like you said, defensively at second base, if you start looking at like defensive war and all that, he's like top five in the big leagues right now. And he doesn't play every day, right? Although he started, 12 already? I haven't even noticed that. Somebody mentioned that yesterday. Oh, you know, Christian has started 12 games. I'm like, oh, okay, that's how I'm in tune with the lineup. You know, like I just put guys, and I don't count. Okay, 12 starts. He doesn't have to play. I just go with the flow, and whoever I feel is gonna help us to win the game, I put there, and he's helped me using Marwin at first, using Marwin at short, using Marwin at third, keeping Enrique in center field, who's played outstanding out there. So. We're very pleased. I mean, this kid, he knows the game. He knows how to play it, and he's producing right now.
Hey, last one for me real quick. I know you guys sent Chris Sale down to Fort Myers. You guys aren't putting a timetable on there, but you feel good about where he's at?
Really good. Really good. I had a good conversation with him 2 days ago, and the way he threw the ball, his last flat ground was really good, very aggressive, going down there. Be around the family and keep working in his craft. And this guy is going to help us in the long run. He will help us.
The more you win, is it going to be harder to keep him away? Just knowing him?
No, the other way around, right? The more you win, the more patient you are. It'll be good. We have to be patient anyway. So.
Best record in the American League, and everything seems to be working to perfection with the exception of maybe Sunday and the first three games of the season. Is there anything that worries you or concerns you when you look at this team long term?
We got to keep playing good defense. If we do that, we'll be okay. I think our pitching staff is solid. We don't have too many swing and misses as other pitching staff. So defense is very important for us.
Alex, always great talking to you. We'll do it again next week. Have a good
one. Thank you, guys. Take care.
See you later. Bye-bye. Alex Cora on the Harbor One Hotline right here on OMF.